The international break hoodoo is over for Albion and they are almost there in the quest for the playoffs. We'll be discussing all that and more on this week's Baggies broadcast. Hello, Baggies fans, and welcome to the latest episode of the Baggies broadcast in association with the Kettle and Toaster Man. My name is Johnny Drury, and as always, I'm here with the ENS's Albion correspondent, Lewis Cox. Coxie, how's things, my man? Midweek? Good week so far?
Hello, Johnny. Fine. As international breaks go, fine. Caught a sniffle, but, you know, we'll
caught a sniffle, bit under the weather, are you, mate? Bit under the weather.
Yeah. Bit chill, mate.
Is that leading up to your absence for Millwall a week on Friday, or
couldn't possibly comment at this stage, Johnny? You've gone early there. I presume we'll be podcasting.
Well, I was going to leave it till later in the podcast, but
we had a tweet, didn't we? I did see that we'd had a cheeky tweet.
We did. Someone's noticed your absences from long away trips. It's not just me.
Well, you know, as perhaps AJ was right. Maybe I'm scared to go to Millwall. Maybe that's it.
Oh, mate, I'm always scared to go to Millwall, so I wouldn't worry too much about that.
You're just scared of the capital, full stop, aren't you?
I don't mind the capital. I just don't like Millwall away, purely because I can't go and meet the Albion fans because I can never get through the gates.
Yeah. Or anything road-related to the capital.
Anything road-related, yeah, that's one thing. We'll discuss that later on, or discuss that next week. And also the fact that you don't really hear any other words from the crowd apart from ones that begin with C.
And that weird noise of Mill.
That's going to be a big talking point next week.
The press box proximity to the home, man. I mean, you're properly in it, aren't you?
Oh yeah, you are. At the Den. You are at the Den. You certainly are in the Lions' Den. But the
away end sold out, hasn't it? I gather, or it's very close to being sold out. So it's going to be a hell of an away day. All jokes aside, we'll talk about it next week. But disappointed to be missing it for a family wedding. Yeah, and I'm sure you'll bring me home the 3 points, though, Johnny. No doubt about that.
Yeah, hopefully we will. Before that, we've got lots to discuss. We're going to have a little bit of reflection on the Bristol City win and how that affects the race for the playoffs. We're going to talk about Shilan Patel. We're going to talk Jed Wallace, Jan Mvia. We had the first glimpse of him at the weekend. We'll talk about Coxie's field trip to go and see the under-21s on Monday night. We'll answer all your questions and we'll have a little glance forward to that Easter Monday bank holiday. We'll talk more about it next week, but we'll have a little bit of a look ahead to that. But the win against Bristol City, Coxie, for me, it was, a win that sort of underlined that Albion can do it in different ways. We saw that at Huddersfield. You know, they were absolutely dreadful in the first period and were able to turn it around in the second with that blistering display. Against Bristol City, you know, it wasn't vintage. There weren't a mountain of chances. It's not like Albion missed a load of chances and then won narrowly. But they got the job done. They were clinical when in the past you probably could have accused them of not being clinical.
Yeah. I think one of the first things we said on the video after the game, Johnny, was that it won't sell many DVDs really on the old end of season. Which, you know, it wasn't a thriller, was it? Let's be honest. But no less important. Routine was the word, wasn't it? It was routine. It felt fairly low key. You know, I think the home crowd struggled to get excited by it, but that doesn't downplay how important the 3 points were. I think going into this break, they were massively important, given rivals not playing, results elsewhere, the gap it could open up. And you make a good point about being able to win while not flourishing, you know, while not at the top of the game. At Huddersfield, Albion only had to play for 20 minutes, didn't they? And it was enough for four goals. I mean, the two goals here came, 5-6 minutes either side of half time. So clinical. Yeah. And let's be honest, Albion probably had to be clinical because Tom Fellows's opening goal on 45 minutes was the first chance of the game, wasn't it? First shot almost for Albion. Certainly first shot on target. But in a few players now, Fellows and Johnson, the obvious ones. Obviously, Jed got on the scoreboard, as you say. We're seeing some players start to discover the touch in front of goal, be it laying on assists or finding the net more, sort of growing in confidence in that final third. And that's important because this team doesn't create chances by the shed load, does it? You know, they're not swashbuckling, but effective, really. Got the job done. Important win. Just sets the tone going into the break, doesn't it? I think importantly. And how many times have we spoke about, you know, prosperous feelings on the other time, on the other side, sorry, in terms of returning players to fitness and the running. You know, we're now officially in the running, aren't we? And things certainly in terms of the table look pretty good.
Yeah, they do look pretty good indeed. You mentioned Jed Wallace there, and we talked about him last week, and I'm just going to talk about him again. I was a bit critical of him last week and sort of raised the question as a bit of a debate point about whether he's, you know, is he behind sort of Tom Fellows and Mikey Johnson at the moment in terms of wingers? But in terms of a set, you know, we talked extensively last week about the work that he's put in that makeshift role. And I was just delighted to see him get that goal. One, because it'll probably give him a bit of a confidence boost. And two, it was a proper striker's poacher's sort of finish, really. It was a great move from Albion, like front to back, really, really quickly, really swiftly. And it's a goal, it's a finish that we haven't seen a lot of, even from strikers this season. I know it's been, majority has been Brandon Thomas Asante. Probably there's only a handful of his goals that have been sort of poacher's goals. And we've talked about that in the past. But I think a positive sign is the fact that Wallace was getting in those areas to take those chances, and he took one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a good point, that. I mean, I had a chat with Jed Wallace after the game. I know we've done a couple of pieces from that, and there's still a couple to come. And he's had to apply that role for a number of weeks now, hasn't he? If 6 weeks, a couple of months, because of the lack of a, you know, striker availability. And credit to him, it's not his position. I'm sure he'd have done it over his career. I know he's done it a few times for Albion, but it's not natural to him, really. And I think we said, I said on the pod last week, I'm a little bit reluctant to judge him, certainly too critically in this role, because he's doing a selfless job for the team. You know, he's doing what's being asked of him. He's not a striker, never will be, never has been, and deserves credit. And you're right, in terms of that goal, exactly where he needed to be. I asked him about that as well. And striker's finish from a few yards out, he would have done well to miss that one, wouldn't he? But jokes aside, it's about getting into the position, isn't it? And not all strikers have that, you know, that natural instinct of where to be. And yes, sometimes maybe it's fortune, you're in the right place, but you keep making the runs, I suppose they're going to drop for you. And it was earlier in the game where Wallace made a brilliant run onto a through ball, forced him kind of wide. Near to the byline, he put in a great low cross, and there wasn't anyone there. It was down in front of us, Johnny Dan Smerick end, and wasn't anyone there. And that's maybe where Johnson needs to be, the opposite winger, or Dean Garner coming in from the 10 position. And yeah, Wallace must be frustrated by that, because he wants to be putting in the cross from the flanks to strikers and attackers. But Niall, he did a fantastic job in that role, and to finish that's an important second goal. That's taken the game away from Bristol City, hasn't it? I know it wasn't a sort of a decisive third, but at 2-0, I think the job was done, really. I know they threatened late on, but Albion were comfortable for me, and credit to him. I don't think he's been... there's been a bit of chatter around him. I think we've possibly had a question as well, haven't we, for the pod, Johnny, about how, look, does Wallace get his position back on the flank because of Fellows and because of Johnson? And yeah, we'll debate that later, but, you know, by and large, Wallace has been excellent for Albion from his position out wide. And yeah, I don't think he should have to suffer for taking that role up top. He's done a selfless job for the team, chasing down, pressing, not always with the return of the goals that his effort deserves, but you know, he can't be judged on those as some makeshift striker. So well done to him, and credit to him. Yeah, I agree, it's a big goal, and yeah, he deserved it, and it was an important goal in the end as well.
We got our first glimpse of Jan Envia after he worked his way up to fitness after arriving as a free agent earlier in the year. Only a bit of a cameo appearance. I think we saw the technical ability that he's got. But Carlos Colbrand, again, waxing lyrical about him after the game. And it seems, Coxie, I know that midfield two is set in, or not set in stone, but I said last week, they're all Yukushlu and Moa are almost the first two names on the team sheet. But seems like, from what Colbrand is saying, that Envia could have quite a significant part to play between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I thought he did fine. I thought he did well. When you think he hadn't played in 10, 11 months, a competitive game, obviously we were told after he was observing Ramadan and obviously fasting, which, you know, is a massive thing to factor in, isn't it? Not, what is that, eating and drinking in daylight hours? So that's tough.
Did it the other way around? You think it's you can only eat? Can you only eat in darkness? Or was it the other way
yeah,
around?
Yeah. I think Jed Wallace said something like he probably hadn't eaten since 4 a.m. something, you know, sunrise or whatever. So, but especially the length he's been out, you know, but Carlos Corberan's made a good point a couple of times. I think this is a player who was a key regular for Olympiacos in big games, European games, played a lot of minutes. I think Corbin made a point about playing more than 3,000 minutes, which is obviously a big milestone in a season that coaches must use. 3,000 minutes across a campaign, 3 years in a row in Greece. And, you know, yes, advancing years, but that's a good effort. So he's clearly a player that, despite advancing years, still has his legs, still has ambition to play regularly. The question mark is now, isn't it, only on a short-term deal until the end of the season, when and how often are we going to see him? Are we going to see him reach what might be perceived as his best? I don't know. I'm not so sure, but I've got a feeling we'll start to see him as a regular substitute. It kind of was the Chalobah role, wasn't it? And Chalobah was doing well for a couple of months. Seem to remember either side of Christmas. But I think Envia's got a role to play. I think it wouldn't surprise me. Obviously, we all know that Okoye-Koshlu comes off semi-regularly, fairly regularly in games. If Albion can manage him, they will. There are occasions he plays 90 minutes, but I think we'll see Envia come on often. And we saw his ability to keep the ball and intelligence maybe that will come with the career he's had. And I think it was an encouraging cameo. And look, he's probably only one injury in midfield. Touch wood, that doesn't happen. But one injury away from a really key role, isn't he? Let's be honest. But as Jed said to me after the game, I think Envia's career speaks for itself. His quality does as well. And, you know, Wallace gave us a little insight into just how hard he has worked to get to this stage. So, you know, credit to him in that regard. It's an interesting signing. Corbran made no secret about wanting that extra midfielder for the depth, for the cover. And, he seems like he's the next cab off the rank in terms of the substitute now, doesn't he? He got that nod over Chalobah. We know it's Easter weekend next time, double header. There's another Wednesday night fixture coming up, isn't there, Rotherham? So busy spell/weeks, not quite over yet. And you just wonder how much of Envia we'll see and how crucial a role he'll have. But on the basis of that 10-15 minutes, I think he, you know, can be effective.
Yeah, certainly can. We'll just look at the I want to look at the table in terms of what the result on Saturday has done. And we've already talked about it. You know, it's extended Albion's lead to the sides below them with Hull and Coventry not playing. They've obviously got a game in hand, so it's 8 points now to Hull. First off, Coxie, three wins would get Albion to 75, which usually gets you in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that will be enough now? There's eight games to go. You know, I'm almost 100% sure Albion will win three or more of those. Is that going to be enough?
I'd say so. Just looking at it now, do I think that seventh and below will join Albion around that ballpark figure? It's not out of the question, impossible, is it? But you'd hope it would be enough. The thing that strikes me is what you just said, eight games left, four home, four away, is it? And yes, three wins takes Albion to 75, but they're going to get more points than that, you know, given the home record.
Yeah.
Okay, look, I'm eat my words if I'm wrong, but Albion will get more than three wins, more points than nine between now and the end of the season. So I don't think we have to worry too much. They've put themselves in a great position on 66 points where they're not quite scrambling for that mid-70s point. They're it's within touching distance, realistically. The fixtures left, by and large, are quite kind, I think. Some middling teams going nowhere, some lowly teams, yes, scrapping for their lives, but some poor sides to face, let's be honest. Yes, there's Leicester when Leicester could be pushing for it. And yeah, Sunderland and Preston on the final day, we're in and around it, but I don't think they're quite there, are they, enough to push for the top six. So I think the fixtures are decent. Albion's home record gives you confidence anyway that they can win at least three of those four remaining home games. But what is it now? I'm beating in five or six away, is it? Five
if you win the home games.
Yeah, but they found a way of not being beaten on the road. Not being beaten generally, let's be honest. One defeat in 10. So credit to them in not having to worry about reaching 75 almost. It's a totally different complexion to how it was certainly last season. in terms of not having to chase, not having to hope for slip ups. We had some Carlos Corberan quotes today, didn't we, actually, about talking about the dynamic and how it differs this season to last. But Carlos was having none of it. You know, it's like, I never worry about anyone else. Yeah, it's regardless of whether we're chasing, chasers, whatever.
Which is the right attitude to have for a manager, almost, isn't it?
Or the chased. Yeah, it's all on us. Which, yeah, it is. You're right.
And he's right, because if Albion do their job,
they've put themselves in that position. You know, they're 66 points. It was a great insight from Jed Wallace, I thought, of Corbyn before the game against Bristol City. You know, sort of getting a picture of Albion's progress in terms of points this season over games, and saying, look, you know, 66 points is how far you've come from all your efforts and deserved it. And this small kind of 8-game period of 9 games, wouldn't it? 27 points still left to play for. This is the last bit you have to get through to, you know, to get the goal to achieve the target of the top six. And Wallace was saying it, you know, sort of motivational it was and inspirational. And they'll just worry about themselves. And yeah, I agree, Johnny. I think that normal mid 70 range will do the job. And I have very, very, very few concerns about it being done. I think they're in a great position, and potentially an even better one once a couple of bodies are back. You know, there's 8 games to go, so a lot can change. Look, injuries can happen. You know, we all hope not, would be a disaster. But hopefully this kind of consistent form and hard to beat again form can just sort of hang around for another month yet when action returns. And, hopefully when we're heading into May, we're having the same kind of conversation.
Just want to pick up on a stat as well that I've looked at. If you look at the table, you know, there's probably two stats on a table that fans will look at. One is the amount of games played, if anyone's got in games in hand, and what the other is the points. But if you look at the goals for and the goals against column just marry up against the top six, it's pretty impressive. And I think it underlines how impressive it is that Albion are in the top six. Goals against, if you take out the top two, Albion have got the best defensive record in the top six by quite a way.
Only conceded three goals more than Leicester.
Yeah, 36 goals they've conceded. And out of the other four teams that are making up the playoff spots at the moment, that's better by at least 11 goals. And then if you look at the column next to it, in the goals for column, out of all the sides in the top six, Albion have scored 10 less goals than the next side, which is Norwich on 69. You know, for Albion to be in this position, you know, in such a commanding position going into the playoffs at this stage of the season, it's highly impressive when you look at those numbers.
Yeah, well, it tells me one thing, and it's not a surprise because we see it with our own eyes, and results say that a Carlos, and this is no secret, we've known this for a while, but a Carlos Corberan successful team is built on a stable and secure defence. And I always remember the head coach saying to me, I'm not obsessed with clean sheets. And I believe him. I don't think he is. However, his teams concede very few goals, and you know that to me is down to coaching and how he can coach not just defenders, but all of his players. But certainly, I guess in this case, primarily defenders.
Yeah.
But most of all, organisation and tactical formation work. The detail in terms of the preparation that we write about, that I remember, yeah, this week I've written again about how you know the manager speaks to each player individually for half an hour before a game, and all of this classroom lessons and stuff. This is a massive part of why Albion concedes so few goals. There might be some detractors that listen to this and say, well, it's just being defensive and sitting back and not attacking, and just disagree. I don't go along with that. Yeah, if you're being defensive, what, and inviting teams onto you and just lining in your own penalty box and 6-yard box, you're going to concede. It's not like Carl Bartley heads balls clear all games. It's just the tactical organisation of it, and it's no coincidence, I don't think, what he was able to achieve at Huddersfield.
The table in Huddersfield went up, conceded 47, scored 64. Which is, when you look at the sides above them, you know, to be fair, Bournemouth conceded less than that, but sides above them scored 74, Fulham scored 106, Forest scored 73.
It's just a chief organizer, and that's what the goals against that is massively telling. We have to remember how the season started, by the way. Was it 6 or 7 games without a clean sheet? And we're conceding the home wins at 3-2, 4-2. Was it Swansea and Middlesbrough?
Yeah.
You're kind of thinking, well, yeah, this is great on the eye. We'll score score 4, you score 3, whatever. But it's clearly unsustainable. And the clean sheets very quickly started, didn't it? They with a bit of a tweak in formation. And Albion sort of flew on from there. And yeah, I just think it's credit to the head coach's organisational skills that goals against column is a big reason, probably the key reason why Albion are where they are and why everyone's pretty confident.
I'm going to move on to talk Shilin Patel. Seems like we should just insert this topic of conversation every week now, because there's something going on every week. Whereas previously, the previous owner was not to be seen. But Shilin Patel, again, this week we've seen a few stories. Obviously, Coxie's just said there how he spoke to Jed Wallace after the game on Saturday and got some very good words about chats that he'd had with the new owner prior to the game against QPR recently, how he met the team, sat down with the players. And then obviously last week we had that massive statement with the fact that he'd paid off the £5 million Wisdom Smart loan, which has been hanging over Albion for a long time. To be fair, myself, and I'm sure a lot of Albion fans had written that off, and it was arguably written off in the accounts last year, that it wasn't expected to be paid back. Coxie, a huge statement on both fronts. And the more we see little snippets of stuff from Shilin Patel, you know, this is the £5 million is the biggest statement probably so far since he took over the football club. But it seems that he is giving the fans the kind of love and affection that they have craved for so long, as well as putting his money where his mouth is and paying off a loan like this so significantly so early in his tenure.
Yeah, that's love and affection. That's one way of putting it. Yeah, no, I don't disagree. It's actions, isn't it? You know, in terms of proof in the pudding. And look, we could have got to the summer. I mean, this is not hypothetical. This just won't happen for many reasons. But you could get to the summer and, yeah, you make a £5 million signing. And everyone sort of, you know, beside themselves with excitement about this talent coming in or whatever. Well, the world Albion and Shilin Patel live in is get in, address what's gone on and try and sort what's gone on. Clearly, that's the first objective and a priority. And inherited debts, you know, in the acquisition of the club, this being one of them. And what is it? Just about 3 years ago, Lye took this a loan away from the club. It was revealed about a year after that, 2022. So, it's been hanging around for a long time, this, and felt a bit like a thankless, as you say, a thankless task, almost like a pointless topic of debate that was never going to be sorted. But here we are, you know, just what, barely a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks into his reign of Albion, he's paying off that loan. And it's just supporters, they just see actions, the proof's in the pudding. You know, he said everything brilliantly so far, I think, in his club interview. Obviously spoke with the radio and, you know, met ourselves for a chat a couple of weeks ago, and that was great. And he's delivering. You know, he will have plenty to deliver, and there'll be stages, there'll be a plan, a short, mid, long-term plan about things. But we know the MSD loan has been taken on and continued. It's not being paid back yet. And he, you know, Shilin explained that was a business decision. Best way to go about it financially. And it's his money, it's his call, isn't it? I remember a few people being a little bit, you know, eyebrows raised at that. Why is that the case type thing? And there's this other figure here, quite a substantial figure, £5 million, let's be honest, in the current, you know, in any state, but in the current state of West Bromwich Albion, that's not an insignificant figure. And he's paid it off, and it's one big thing less to worry about for supporters, isn't it? And a new owner delivering on his vows and his promises to right the wrongs and get the club moving in the right direction to where they should be. And this was a massive start. It was huge news, wasn't it, last Friday evening? And a breath of fresh air, frankly. I would say a breath of fresh air. So, you know, very much one to be celebrated, I would say, that move. And I'm sure over the sort of months ahead, there'll be much more encouraging signs coming from the new chairman.
Yeah, it's great to see. And hopefully we'll be talking about it more and more as the week goes by. Coxie, you were out on the road on Monday evening, a little field trip down to watch the 21s taking on Manchester United. A 3-0 defeat for Albion. But I'm sure some impressive displays. Now you got a chance to speak to Rich Beale after the game. Who impressed you the most? Any standout youngsters? Obviously, we've seen an array of youngsters given a chance in Carlos Corbrand's first team this season. But who stood out for you on Monday evening?
Harry Whitwell was very good. To be honest, the 3-0, Albion it was an even first half. It was 2-0 at half-time, but it was an even first half. Could have been very different. Could have been 1-0, 2-2. It was a harsh scoreline at the first half. And it was clear that it was a lively, sharp United side. I would say that. But Whitwell just looked like one of the better players on the pitch. Just physically strong, good size, but so intelligent and clever with the ball. Just didn't lose the ball. It doesn't lose the ball, just manages to keep hold of it and move it on. Reminds me a bit of Yukushlu in that way. You know, able to protect the ball and recycle it. Kevin Mufuamba, his midfield colleague, did well as well. More and more encouraged by him when I see him. I always like the look of Reece Hall. He was skipper of the night. Reece Hall, defender, can play centre-back, can play full-back. I think he's a really good prospect, Reece Hall. I do. Ben Cisse, the goalkeeper, England under-19 international, yes, conceded 3 goals, but I know there are high hopes for Ben Cisse, and he does look assured when I see him play. So I can see why, you know, he's got international honours at youth level. A good few players, actually, considering it was a tough second half watch. It was. United came on strong and Albion didn't have too much to write home about in the second period, to be honest. But saw enough quality in that first half. Yeah, Essio Sassou started. One of the first times I've seen him start, the former Celtic youngster. And hit the woodwork from range, had a header over. Quite sharp attacker. Looked decent prospect. I'm not sure he's 17 yet, so maybe just turned 17. So, yeah, some of them did themselves justice. Look, 400 there, not the result that I wanted. High-profile opposition and all of that, but a good experience. No less. And the academy, the under-21s and 18s are doing really good things at the moment under Rich Stevens. They are. We've got news of a couple of pro deals to get onto, haven't we? And Carlos Corbrand's given them a chance, isn't he, in the squad, in training so often. We saw loads on the bench this season because of injuries. The Tom Fellows situation, he's been described as a... What did Rich Stevens call him yesterday? Was it a shining light, I think, of the academy now, Tom Fellows? And that's a massive point worth making, I think. 2 years ago, 18 months ago, before he went to Crawley, Tom Fellows was playing in these games and losing in 21s games, winning, you know, whether it was at Kiddie or Telford or wherever they were playing at that point. Low-key, low-profile games. And look now, you know, he's a shining example that, yes, Fellows has got quality, but with the right attitude and hard work. Because, above all, Tom Fellows has the right attitude and mentality. What a kid. Having interviewed him last week. So that it's possible, that anything's possible, and breaking into the first team and playing in the Championship, you know, age 19, 20 is possible.
Yeah, you mentioned the two there. Jamal Mohamed and Ollie Bostock have signed pro deals with Albion. Mohamed, someone we saw, I think we saw a bit of a glimpse of him at Salford early in the season. He came off the bench in the pre-season.
Cheltenham.
Cheltenham. I think he played at Salford. I wasn't at Cheltenham, and I remember him coming on at Salford.
I think he might have played both.
But two players are obviously highly rated. And like you say, Coxie, just a really good time at the moment for Albion in terms of players that are coming through.
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, there's a thing about being pinched by Villa and stuff. Obviously, I know Villa came in during the January window, didn't they? And bought a 16-year-old for the best part of £1 million. Look, Albion, if Villa are going to come in and offer that, to a point, you know, it's up to the player and his team and his reps. If they see that as the best move, then they'll take it. And yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's a lot of money. At any time, let alone a time of need. and the same happened last summer. But it's frustrating. Like, Albion would rather have the kids stay with them, I'm sure. But, you know, this is not a... I think Fellows has proved, and others, by the way, others, I know others have been sold, but proved that not all of the players now are going to get pinched. You know, Albion are going to try and work their best so this doesn't happen. Yeah, I think with the Whitwell pro deal, with Mifuamba getting a pro deal as soon as possible, Albion are trying their best to lock down these future talents. Yeah, I think those two in particular are very highly rated. So, you know, the best they can do there to keep hold of them, it's important. I wrote a piece in our newsletter this morning about, regardless of the Shilling Patel takeover, this conveyor belt talent is more important than ever because of the, you know, the financial rules about, you know, being unable to splash cash to speculate to get up. So, yeah, Mohammed, the centre half, you're right, Johnny, we saw him in pre-season, 6'5", he is massive lad. Looked really good, to be honest. But sadly, his season was over before it began. ACL in September, in a 21s game, I think, at Hensford, and hasn't played since. He's sort of on his way back now. Started his, yeah, he's back out doing light training, and we'll be back for next season. And I've heard very good things. We've saw good things. Seen a bit of Ollie Bostock as well, the winger, Wales Youth International, only just turned 17 and really been trusted in Beale's 21s this season. He and Cole Deeming, the two younger ones playing regularly there. So yeah, Bostock looks lively, tricky winger, attacker. Yeah, and look, these aren't handed out willy-nilly like this. They'll be rated. They'll be highly rated by the coaches there. And again, I wrote this morning, not all of these players are going to make it and have a career at Albion or even a pro career, but this is a major step, and they're not handed out like sweets, you know. These young kids will really have had to have earned this and shown the ability, but above that, the right attitude and mentality to be rewarded with one. And it's just really important that Albion, you know, this sort of famed and renowned academy continues to produce players. And I like it that Jamal Mohammed was at Peterborough until he was 15 and let go by Posh and snapped up. Yeah, I think in terms of academy recruitment, that's excellent, isn't it?
I think he shows how things can change as well, doesn't it?
Yeah,
we talked about Fellows at the top of the conversation, and you know, I remember Fellows coming off the bench under Valerian Ishmael at Derby, and he looked a little bit lively. And then I remember us talking an awful lot the following week. Albion had just signed Daryl DK. It was the last time Gouch and Lye was at a game at the Hawthorns. It was against Cardiff. I can't remember the result, but there was a big scuffle and a brawl on the pitch at the end. Sam Johnston got sent off. And he played in that game. He started in that game, I think, and he didn't do very well.
Yeah.
And then obviously Steve Bruce came in, didn't really fancy him, out on loan. And it's all about who fancies you at the right time, isn't it? And that's the case with that young lad, Mohammed. You know, so he was at Peterborough, wasn't fancied. Now he's at Albion and his pro deal at a club. He could very, very really be a Premier League club next season. But yeah, good things from the academy.
But just briefly, Johnny, on that, about I chatted to Fellows last week for the first time. We've written a bit up and still got a load of great stuff from that interview to come. One of the things Tom Fellows said to me about the Crawley loan was that no one else fancied him. Crawley was the only move we could get. You know, it weren't like they were queuing up. And, you know, Crawley looked a bit of a basket case from the outside, didn't it? I think, according to reports, yeah, barely stayed afloat in the bottom of the Football League, League Two, fighting relegation all season. But it's crazy now. Yeah, he's one of the best young English players in the Championship now, in the Football League. And, you know, his value now is off the scale, isn't it? And it's just, it's a funny odd game, really. It's, you know, you take those unglamorous chances and you reap the rewards, I guess, if you've got the right mindset.
Yeah, indeed. Shout out for our sponsor, the Kettle and Toaster Man, sponsors all our podcasts here at the Express and Star. And as we always tell you, he is a graded product specialist who has a mountain of top quality products at prices you wouldn't really believe. This week, we're going to talk about cordless vacuums. And I can vouch for these. These are pretty handy pieces of kit. Now, Coxie, I don't know if this will resonate with you. You don't strike me as a man who would do the hoovering in your Telford mansion.
Okay.
You might surprise me here. Or is this a piece of equipment that you've never quite used before?
No, I'm a hooverer, Johnny.
You're a hoover? You're a hooverer?
You don't
have you got a cordless one, though?
Yeah. So it depends who you ask. No, I don't. No, no. I have a little cordless one for the car, but it's not very good. So I might have to get down to Ketel and Toast in
there. It's definitely the place you want to go. I can vouch for this. I bought a corded one in my last home from an unnamed supermarket. I'm not going to throw them under the bus, although they wouldn't care. And it was absolutely useless. But I bet if I went to the Ketel and Toaster Man, he would sort me out. It makes life so much easier. And if you need one, how about this for price? You can get yourself on a Daewoo Cyclone Digital Flex Cordless Vacuum. It's got a touchscreen control panel. Coxie, have you ever heard of a touchscreen control panel on a vacuum cleaner?
Well, no, only on spaceship, Johnny. Yeah.
You get 3 years manufacturer's warranty comes with it as well. All four, wait for it, 100 quid. 100 quid to make your life so much easier. And it's not just the only product they've got down there. Like Coxie said, handheld ones for your car are massive as well. They've got loads of quality products. Beldre, Pifco, Tower, Hoover, and many more top brands. So if you want to get your hands on one of those, head to Thorns Road in Briley Hill. Go to ketelandtoasterman.co.uk. And next week, we'll be hearing more about Coxie's household chores. I just want to...
That's not a long conversation.
That's why I brought up about the hoovering, mate. But you've surprised me there. You've surprised me.
Yeah. One of a few. Yeah, hoover and bins. That's
hoover and bins. Bins is a grim job, isn't it? Bins
of washing up.
Job.
Well, I'm
I don't mind that, I don't mind washing up. I find it quite fair.
The basis of doing no cooking on the washer. So that's fine.
That's fair enough. Sharing the jobs around equally. Just want to move on to something a bit more serious. Just we've mentioned it a few weeks ago, but just want to wish former Baggies manager, Baggies legend, Tony Mowbray, all the best. Albion fans will have seen yesterday, it was confirmed he's going to take a leave of absence until next season. He was having about sort of 6 weeks away from the club. He underwent an operation for a medical condition. However, the Blues have brought in former manager Gary Rowett until the end of the season, with Mowbray taking a leave of absence until pre-season next season. So we wish him all the very best. Still an absolute legend down at the Hawthorns. We hope he gets well soon. Right, time for some burning questions. And we had one before we'd even put the shout out, and it caused an awful lot of debate yesterday. I looked on my phone, I was on a day off yesterday, and my Twitter mentions were going through the roof. And it was a question from Spencer George. It was following on from some conversation on the Liquidator podcast. He was asking myself and Coxie, would Albion fans be willing to sell the naming rights of the Hawthorns to generate income? I think we had this question a while ago.
I think we've touched on it briefly.
I think I was going to call it something like the Greggs Hawthorns or something. No, Toby Carvery Hawthorns was my guy, wasn't it? Yeah, it's an interesting debate, and it's caused it's divided opinion just among the mentions on Twitter. I don't know. It's one of these, isn't it? It happens so regular these days that if it did happen, you can't stop it. However,
yeah,
everyone's still going to call it the Hawthorns, no matter what it's called. You know what I mean? My example is that look at Reading's ground, the car leasing arena or something. I still call it the Majesty Stadium. All these grounds, still call them by their original names. Fans, their own fans do, and other supporters do as well. If Albion's ground was renamed, the Cinch Stadium or something like that, away fans aren't going to go, oh, I'm going to watch my team away at the Cinch Stadium today. It just wouldn't. But I suppose it's more of a sort of heritage point, isn't it? And it strikes me as though it wouldn't be something someone like Shilin Patel would do. But if he does, it's obviously for the good of the club.
I'm a bit mixed on this, really. I mean, we're typical football grumblers, aren't we, that are like anti this kind of thing, because we go around the country and I've lost count of the amounts of stadiums I've visited where you kind of get there, you see on the match day programme or a billboard or a team sheet that's got some daft new name that's like 10 words long of a company you've never heard of or whatever, but each club's just looking after number one, isn't it? And that's fine. The fans of all clubs, I dare say, will be having or will have had a similar debate. That the Hawthorns is, like Albion itself, an institution. And you made a point, I can't remember if it was on the pod or privately, about how kind of it happens less with the bigger, more historic grounds. And yes, Arsenal and Man City are named but their newer grounds, aren't they, that were built more recently, but certainly the older grounds, you know, can just the big ones across the country and then the big ones locally. It's difficult to imagine, isn't it?
I think you mentioned the ones at the top as well. They were named when they were built, you know.
When they were built.
Cities, maybe not. I know it was known as Eastlands before, or City Manchester Stadium, but Arsenal's always been the Emirates Stadium.
Yeah. I take the point about, fans will always know it as the Hawthorns. And, you know, I've seen a lot of fans say, oh, I'm going up the Albion and going up the match. Yeah, definitely. And even if it was changed for a sponsor, yeah, you're right, it would just be Hawthorns, and only certain media or advertisement clearly would refer to it as the, you know, we buy any car Hawthorns or whatever. But
chanting the we buy any car song from the
compare Medigan. The Hawthorns or something, you know, it's just. But I also do see the argument of the revenue driver. I do see that, and but I don't know what companies and brands would fork out for the naming rights, but I dare say it would be sizable, because of, you know, the exposure it would get when, you know, on TV highlights and all the rest of it online to millions of followers. So it's an interesting one. You make a good point, I think, about Patel. Doesn't strike me as that. It strikes me as someone very connected with wanting to be on board with the club's heritage, history, community. However, if they decide and see that the numbers work, I'm not speaking for them, I'm just generalizing here really, and it's something they'd have to consider, then I dare say it would be, but I'd be a little bit surprised. But I think Spencer George put it up as a vote, didn't he, on his tweet question to us, and I think it was quite close.
Yeah, it was.
I'd have expected fans to be by and large dead against this. But then it's that thing of, oh, we'll always know it as the Hawthorns, and we won't call it by a sponsor name anyway. And someone give the Newcastle United, you know, St James as an example, Sports Direct, obviously under Ashley, and you know that's probably a decent example, really. You know, very few people would have called it, Sports Direct, whatever, would they? So it's an interesting debate. I think plenty would be against it. Some maybe more open. Minded folk can get it. I'd be surprised, really. I'd be surprised by it, Johnny. I'm not a great fan, but look, maybe if it's the way the world of football is going, then perhaps it's something we'll have to consider. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Stephen D has asked, on the field we're doing great, so it might be one for another time. But I hope the summit is used to give the ground a bit of a tidy up. Bird muck on seats. The white on the top of the Birmingham Road end is green, moss on walls and bricks outside the East End, barely readable, poor, when a lot of them are tributes. Yeah, it's a good point, and I'm sure it's something that, if raised, will be picked up on. And I'm sure that's probably something that, you know, the new hierarchy, you know, when owners go into football clubs, they kind of think, we want to get here, we're going to spend this money on the field, we don't care about anything else, and everything else falls to pieces. I'm sure there are people working on infrastructure and various different things at Albion under this new, you know, it might take a little while, but I'm sure there will be, because sort of,
yeah, it's not all about transfers and wages.
No, and I don't think it will be with the new owner. But Hamza Darby has asked, assuming Madger and Phillips won't be ready to start after the break, who starts up front now, BTA or Wallace? If BTA is the answer, does Wallace replace a winger or drop to the bench? Coxie, you're up.
At Millwall, I'd start Thomas Asante and I would play Wallace.
For me, you'll take Fellows out at Millwall, I think.
No, it would mean Wallace right, Fellows left, Johnson central, and Gray down the bench.
Yeah, that'll be interesting because he hasn't played Johnson in the middle, has he?
No, but he keeps saying that he can do it.
Yeah, and that might be interesting. My only thought of Fellows coming out would be. He's taking him out in certain games, and it's a very volatile place to go and play. It's a pressurized environment. Not that he can't handle it, but whether he would take him out. But I think, you know, the alternative you've given there, I think that's a pretty good front four, to be honest.
Or continue with Thomas Asante as an impact sub, and then if you need a goal around an hour, or you need some spark or energy in the final third, turn to him then. We haven't quite had that yet, have we, since the striker's been back. You know, the need where we need to come on. And yes, he's not a natural, you know, regular goal scorer, but still a presence up there. So there's an argument for that. But I'd like to see him from the off. I'd just like to see a bit of a focal point up top again.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Be interesting to see. Thanks for your question, Hamza. Just a few more. Andy Dickens, what does AJ think of Coxie and his lack of dedication to dodging most of the horrible away trips? Well, he has been informed, Andy. I've made everyone aware that Coxie just keeps leaving me on these long jaunts. You know, trudging down the motorway on my own.
The less said about what AJ thinks on this podcast, the better.
Well, yeah, a lot of it is not. Even though he's very articulate when he comes on the podcast to stand in for Coxie, when we talk to him in the press room, is a lot of his language probably can be repeated. But Coxie, you leave me from it. You know what? This Millwall game, the game that I've been trying to book off for years since I started this job, and I just can't. I just can't. Somehow can't seem to do it. You know, I went the first year. You know, I couldn't interview the fans. I didn't pay me congestion charge, so I got an 80 quid fine. Last year was just horrible as well. Bad result.
Weren't you hungover last year, Johnny?
I was, yeah. So that's my own fault, really, because I stayed at a friend's in London before.
The good news is you won't have to worry about it next year because we'll be in the Premier League. So
hopefully, yeah, well, yeah, so every cloud, but yeah. Yes, Andy, he is very much aware, and I will, for the end of season podcast, be totting up all the miles that Coxie has missed from his tactical booking off holidays.
Wait till we tell the listeners that I'm not at Stoke because I'm a third.
Tackle that one. That's not too bad. Don't mind that. It's quite close for me.
Yeah, and also that's none of these are my fault, by the way. You know, I think there was
a few tactical, you know, looking at diaries and booking holidays for the last one. You know, I'm just putting it out there. But yeah, anyway, two more questions. All Albion fans, are you looking forward to the food at Wembley? Think they'll put on a carvery with it being a Sunday? Yeah, come on, let's not get too far. Let's remember what Carlos said, what we were saying earlier in the podcast. Although, yeah, if it's a Sunday, I'm hoping there's going to be a banging carvery at Wembley. Never been to Wembley before for a game. I know you have, Coxie. You've done a couple of finals at Wembley, haven't you?
Yeah.
What was the scram like when you went?
I did a playoff final there, and it was a Sunday, and from memory, it was a roast. And from memory, it was good. So, yeah, let's... we can be excited about that, but there's a long way to go, isn't there, at the risk of sounding like a Spanish head coach. To be honest, regards this question, we're spoilt enough at the Hawthorns, so very tasty food there. But we'll see. More of that on what is it, May the 26th?
Yeah, May the 26th. Just talking about the food at the Hawthorns, Coxie had to just have a plate of vegetables, didn't you, the other day? Because you were late, and then I was surprised by how much of the unbelievable beef that I'd been given, and then I must have been given your portion, to be honest, mate.
Not only did I have to have a plate of veg for being done by roadworks and being a bit behind schedule, I then foolishly covered it with horseradish.
Yeah. What are you doing?
It was a disaster.
I don't know what you thought it was. Did you think it was mayo or something?
I thought it was not horseradish. I'm not going to tell you what I thought it was. Move on.
Final question. Son of Patel. This is not food related. Son of Patel. It was making us laugh a lot on Twitter at the moment with his references to being part of the Patel family that own the Hawthorn. So I must take my hat off to him for that. What are your thoughts on Swift? Considering the heavy fixture load recently, it was surprising not to see at least one start for him or more substitute minutes. Do you think Carlos doesn't fancy him as much as any... Sorry, speaking too quickly there. Do you think Carlos doesn't fancy him as much anymore or prefers the pace of our other attackers / wingers? Now, we talked about Swift, didn't we, last week, Coxie?
Yeah.
On the back of the pod, I wrote a bit of a comment piece saying he hasn't got a point to prove in terms of the quality that he brings, but in terms of the consistency of it, that's where the kind of the question marks still lie with Swift. And it's interesting. I'm with Sunil there. I thought he might have been used a little bit more over recent weeks because it has been a bit of a busy fixture load. But I think his last start came at Plymouth, I believe. I'm not too sure 100% on that, but it might have been there or even maybe further back. But are you surprised by it?
Well, just repeat really what we said last week about him taking a chance when it comes to him. Now, the other day, Saturday, came on, I think first change No, there's a change at half time, wasn't there? Bartley, but first attacking change, 65 minutes, and I think he did okay, but did he really grasp an opportunity to really just stamp his authority on that position or stake a claim? You know, around about next time, who comes in or who goes out, and I say, you know, Wallace coming, you know, that position, and Johnson and Fellows, and then maybe Grady dropping out. There's no mention of bringing Swift in, is there? And yeah, I don't know. Maybe one to put to Corbyn, I think, next time we get a chance, maybe before Millwall, just to see what he's expecting from Swift. Maybe he has to show a bit more in training to get in. I don't know. But I think, to be honest, I think the answer is that, look, Dean Garner's scoring goals, isn't he? Or he certainly was. He seems to have came back from, obviously, injury, AFCON, and made that position his own again. And the other two, you know, there's no sort of knocking Fellows or Johnson at the moment, is there? They're just performing. They've come in, took their starting chance and performing, and Swift perhaps wasn't. And when he's come from the bench, he hasn't had that cameo that he's needed to have to get in. I mean, I wasn't at Plymouth, so I can't comment on how he played that night, but just hasn't had the form or the consistency since that injury at the start of the season, has he? And that's such a shame, because he was Albion's best attacker at the start of the season. So it was a case of what might have been, really. He might think selfishly, look, I need to be given a chance from the offing games, but I think did an interview, didn't he, with the club, I think a week or so ago.
Last week, yeah.
Saying he gets it. Like, you know, there's no sort of bad blood or animosity. Look, it's cracking squad for the level and others are flying and, you know, you're all pulling for the same objection. Yes, you know, privately, deep down, he'd want to be starting games. Of course he would. But I'm sure he probably gets it. And the answer's the same as last week, really, that he needs to just to force his way in when he gets the opportunity. And that's, yeah, in the last 20 minutes, half an hour in games. Or, I guess, by doing some extra in training. But while players are performing, it's quite difficult to change it, isn't it, and take them out.
Yeah. Baggies fans, thank you very much for your questions. We're almost out of time here. Free weekend this weekend, international break. We haven't had one for a while. Coxie, not much plan?
Not too much, Johnny. No, recovery Saturday, I think, and I got a Sunday shift.
Recovery Saturday? You got every night Friday or something?
Well, no, just a
recharging the back.
Recovery from the week, Johnny, basically. Yeah, yeah. How about you? You taking in a game on Saturday?
Do you know what? I was thinking about it, but I'm just going to go and play golf, I think. I'm going to get out on the golf course on Saturday. I've got a day off. Usually we would have Football League games to cover, but ironically, the five clubs we cover here at the Express and Sound Shopstar, even Shrewsbury and Walsall are off for international call-ups.
And Walsall off as well. I thought Walsall had Swindon at home.
Yeah, international call-ups has put pay to that one as well. So, no games. But I'm sure you Baggies fans will be out watching non-leaguers this weekend.
I might get down to the pool, get down to the bays and have a bit of pool action, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe just a
bit of a pool hustler, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. But that involves just having a nice pint, doesn't it? You know, no sort of physical activity. So
yeah, I'm sure the Baggies fans will be sort of either twiddling their thumbs or they'll be out at non-league games. Coxie, the weekend after. I'm just going to ask you one question on this, because we'll go in more on Millwall and Watford next week. But if I offered you 4 points from the weekend or the bank holiday weekend, would you take it?
Yeah, four and no less. Yeah. Just because I think Millwall away is generally tricky. Back Albion to go there and win at the moment. And to be honest, if you're asking me what I think the return will be, I think 6 points, but I would accept four as a minimum.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Coxie, as always, good to chat. Baggies fans, we're almost there in the quest for the playoffs as the season moves into the final stretch. Enjoy your free weekend. We'll be back next week ahead of what is that bank holiday double header. Thanks for listening. And until next time, boing, boing.
Boing, boing. We'll be right back.